Next closest to Jupiter, called Europa, Ganymede may once have had a thin crust of ice with a watery ocean beneath it. However, unlike Europa, whose interior might still be liquid, Ganymede underwent a cooling period that appears to have formed its present thick crust. The Galileo mission to Jupiter, set for launch later this month, has many objectives, including a plan to study the geologic history of Ganymede. The Galileo spacecraft will travel 100 to 1,000 times closer to Ganymede than Voyager did. Scientists hope that it'll come close enough to decipher the unknown composition of Ganymede. Stardate and Stardate Magazine are productions of the McDonald Observatory. We're at the University of Texas at Austin. Our zip code is 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
And what Joel Block did not tell you is that perhaps that space shuttle that goes up next Thursday, will be the last we'll ever see, because it might be the last day we ever see. Details coming up.
This is the universe. Big, isn't it?
What is known as my flip side. I won't be able to sit down for a week.
And a very good evening. You're in tune to 90.1 FM WUSB, and the program is Brain Damage on until 12 midnight, as usual on Saturday nights. And that was a track off the Big Audio Dynamite 12-inch called If I Were John Carpenter. And I'd like to start off the program with a short story, a little short story that came off the Associated Press. We've got a lot to talk about tonight, a lot, including the possible disaster in the sky next week, also changes in East Germany, Hungary, Poland, and hey, maybe even the United States, who knows? Miracles are always possible. But can't resist this. This is the most incredible thing I've read this week. It's an Associated Press story out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, on October 6th, which was yesterday. Members of a jury here say they acquitted a man of rape because the woman's clothing suggested she had asked for it. Sexual assault counselors and women's groups expressed anger and disbelief at the verdict, which the six-member jury reached Wednesday in a Broward County Circuit Court. It's a fairly horrendous verdict, said Ellen Varagyas at the National Women's Law Center in Washington. No one, regardless of how they are dressed, should be allowed to be raped under a knife. On the night the 22-year-old woman said she was raped, she wore a tank top and a short white lace skirt without underwear, according to testimony. She asked for it, said one juror, Roy Diamond. Another juror, Dean Medeiros, said, "We felt she was up to no good the way she was dressed." And on that rather cheerful note, as we plunge into the 1990s, we begin tonight's program. Now, next week, launch of a space shuttle is scheduled. I believe it's the space shuttle Atlantis. And there is a special little package on board. I believe it's the part of the Galileo mission headed to Jupiter that contains some rather nasty substances. And there are some citizens groups, as we discussed a few weeks ago in this program, that are trying to stop that launch and trying to maybe save quite a few people in so doing. Now, I said I would try to find out more facts about the matter. So what I have done is I've sought out somebody who knows quite a bit more than me. And we have on the line with us right now Robert Knight of WBAI fame. You may recognize him from Undercurrents. Robert, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, it's good to hear a voice of sanity in this craziness that we plod through each week here.
Yes, in fact, and moving from your short story to this long shot that we're going to be talking about, it occurs to me that sometimes men making decisions have as little respect for Mother Earth as they do for its daughters.
That's certainly true. That is certainly true. A lot of it is just the glory of the moment, so to say. Was I correct? It is the space shuttle Atlantis?
Ah, yes. Well, next week, something very dangerous could happen. And that is with the launch of the shuttle Atlantis, which is significant because it is carrying an interplanetary space probe called Galileo, named, of course, after the astronomer who developed the telescope and watched the satellites of the giant planet, one which is very interesting astronomically. However, the problem is that in order to power this probe, which is planned to go to Jupiter and drop some equipment down and orbit and explore the Jovian system, the Galileo probe is fueled by a nuclear reactor. And that nuclear reactor is carrying within it 49.4 pounds of plutonium. And the problem with this launch is that there is a certain margin of error which could, in a catastrophic development, result in the explosion of the craft and the release of the plutonium on board. Of course, if that were to happen and the plutonium were to be released into the atmosphere, you would have a cloud of death that would scatter for the entire perimeter of the remains fluttering back down to Earth. And each of these plutonium molecules, plutonium has a half-life of about 250 years, any lung, any throat that came into contact with this material would almost certainly develop cancer.
Now, how wide an area would be affected in a worst-case scenario?
Well, that is something that is ultimately unpredictable because there are variables of wind, direction, time of launch, or the potential explosion and or release of the materials. And the lower down that this might happen, the more concentrated the fallout would be, and the higher up, the more widely distributed. There are conflicting reports on a, I guess you would call it organized guessing, as to what the risk of an explosion or release of plutonium might be. And I'm sure, Eric, it would come to no surprise to you that private organizations of social and environmental concern estimate the risk to be significantly higher than the government estimates the risk to be. Some of the groups that are fighting the launch at this time with the uncertainties say that the odds of an accident that could release the plutonium are 1 in 430. NASA, on the other hand, says that the risk is only one-fifth that amount, saying that the probable release in the event of an accident is only 1 in 2,500. However, you have to remember that the launch of the shuttle is something which has a 4% established probability of failure. 1 in 25 of them has exploded. And we have no reason to believe that the odds have changed significantly from the time of the Challenger disaster.
Now, I was discussing this with someone over the past couple of weeks who said that if the shuttle were to explode like the Challenger, it wouldn't necessarily mean that all of this would be released. After all, a nuclear reaction takes place at much higher temperatures than an actual explosion. Does that bear any relevance to this?
Well, the main health and biohazard is health concern and biohazard is not literally of there being a runaway nuclear reaction, but the release of the material, whether it has fully fissioned or not, into the environment and its exposure not only to humans but to the grassy countrysides, birds, fish, cows, cattle. And the vegetables that people would be eating. And once again, the alpha-emitting materials there are something where it just takes one of them to destabilize the biological system of whatever unfortunate organism ingests it.
I see. Plus, the fact that if this mission is successful, undoubtedly more will follow.
Oh yes, there have been nuclear reactors shot into space numerous times before. Reactors that are used primarily for two purposes. For instance, the Voyager interplanetary probes that are now trailing out towards the edge of the solar system in search of the heliopause and so on were designed because they would be so distant that solar panels would provide an insufficient amount of energy for it to continue to communicate with the Earth, so they had a boom, a long rod attached to the craft so that the nuclear reactor was at some distance from the more sensitive electronic parts, but using a thermoelectric process to provide electrical power. I think I should point out just one other thing about the complexity and the unsettled hazards of this Galileo launch at this time. The trajectory of its getting to Jupiter is an extraordinary one. Imagine, if you will, a yo-yo champion doing a move in which the yo-yo is put to sleep and then yanked back up the string and then looped around before it can reach the top back up to the hand and then flung once more around the world. The trajectory of Galileo is something like that. The shuttle would, under NASA's plan, take it up and then launch the craft in the direction of Venus. From Earth, traveling inwards towards the sun to Venus, the craft would move and it would sort of loop around the planet Venus, gathering kinetic energy, going faster, and doubling back to a position where the Earth will be by then. So there is the launch stage, which provides an atmospheric hazard, and then there is a second encounter with Earth as the Galileo comes back from Venus. It comes back from Venus, gets accelerated a little bit more as it scrapes by the Earth, and goes out to the asteroid belt, which is out past Mars, but not quite as far as Jupiter. It goes up there like a high-top fly, and it comes back down in towards the Earth and loops around the Earth yet again before getting enough speed to make it this final time all the way out to Jupiter. And so the second encounter of it with Earth is one that comes very, very close to the edge of the Earth's atmosphere. And so in addition to the hazards of a possible launch destruction of the craft, there is the hazard that if the guidance system fails at this time, the probable circular error could conceivably bring it not just glancing by the Earth, but somewhat off target onto the Earth. And again, you would have the release of plutonium into the atmosphere.
That's certainly incredible. It's hard to believe that such risks would be taken Are there nations expressing concern about this? Because it does affect them as well as us.
Well, neither the Soviet Union nor the United States governments can afford to be too critical of each other, because each has, I guess you might say, radioactive fingerprints in space. Both sides use nuclear reactors in their reconnaissance and surveillance and espionage satellites, some of them, particularly the ones that are dedicated to ocean coverage, where you have a large area and you need a really powerful boost in order to get the radar to shoot down and to relay the intelligence back to the command centers. So both nations, both of the superpower nations, are involved in that. The People's Republic of China, of course, has also joined the club, as it were, and each of them has contributed to the release of radioactive materials, whether you're talking about Cosmos 954 when it fell to Earth in Canada, or the atmospheric test that the Chinese conducted just a few years ago. But the people who are objecting to the plan are a coalition of three groups. One of them is a local Florida environmental group. The other is the Christic Institute, a public interest law firm based in Washington, D.C., as well as the Foundation for Economic Trends, an organization that is led by a man named Jeremy Rifkin, who is the author of various books on hazards of the, you might say, New Age. He's the author of Alchemy and a number of other books. What they have done is they have filed suit in federal court to postpone the launch, because of the uncertainty of the chance for releasing this plutonium. And a federal judge is due to rule on that at the beginning of this week. NASA, in the meantime, is going ahead with their countdown schedule for the launch, and we won't know until possibly the day before the launch whether it will be legally permitted to proceed. The general gist of the lawsuit is that an adequate environmental impact statement has not been made, or that the risks have not been fairly or accurately assessed. Of course, the rush to launch at this time is, from the point of view of someone interested in science and the universe and nature, it doesn't really make a lot of difference whether it is launched on October 12, 1989, or sometime during the year 1991, because the three planets involved, Earth, Venus, and Jupiter, have the same orientation, a relative orientation in their orbits, in just 2 years from now, at which time perhaps a more reasonable and less slapdash preparation might be made. And again, the idea of delaying scientific work is nothing new to the to NASA, since they have one is tempted to say prostituted, but one could say converted much of their administrative focus to serving military needs at the expense of science. So there are real cogent arguments for postponing the launch, but we will not know what the legal determination is until Monday or Tuesday of next week.
We're speaking with Robert Knight of the WBAI program Undercurrents and also Earthwatch. Robert, I'd like to ask, I've only seen little tiny bits about this in newspapers, and really not much to speak of at all in any other form of media, except perhaps Pacifica and WBAI. Why is this? Why aren't the media clinging to this? Sounds like a sensationalist type of story.
Well, you would certainly get a lively answer on that one from my partner, Dennis Bernstein, who has done some reporting on this story as well, and who featured in, I believe, the 10 most censored stories of 1988. And the problem, I think, Eric, is that there is a trance that most American corporate media enters when dealing with matters of national security, covert action, or technology. And one very real measure of that trance of obedient promotion the press enters, is can be done by doing a word search and just looking at how many times the word flawless appears next to the word launch. in reference to what NASA has been doing over these years. None of the launches have been flawless. Yet that appears almost as if it's a mandatory word. And I don't know why more reporters do not take the challenge of developing information independently or being less of a cheerleader or an emotional therapist. But that is the case, and I think that that would help explain why we see as few stories on such a significant risk as we do.
Also, there's a lot of, I would hasten to say, a lot of lack of education among many reporters. I've seen it in other fields, and I don't doubt that it's present in this one. People believe the press releases and don't really dig any further. Unlike you guys, of course, we're always digging into things you shouldn't be digging into, as some people say. What's that? Sorry?
It's our job.
Yeah, it is. It is, and I'm surprised more reporters don't feel that way. Robert, what can people who are interested in pursuing this a little further do?
Well, although I don't have the phone numbers at hand, they're quite accessible through directory assistance. And the two groups that are spearheading the operation are the CHRISTIC Institute, that's the CHRISTIC Institute, and they are based in Washington, D.C., as is the other group called the Foundation for Economic Trends, FET, Foundation for Economic Trends. They're both in the 202 area code. And the third group, for people who have connections in the Florida area, let's see if I can recall the name of that group. Give me just a moment. Yes, it's the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice.
Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice, okay. Now, these groups, I imagine, have been active in other things as well in the past. Is that correct?
Oh, well, yes, indeed. The Foundation for Economic Trends has been very much concerned with biohazard. It was Jerry Marifkin and that group which brought together an unthinkable coalition of religious leaders from the utter right to the more humane and progressive sorts of religious leaders. Out of concern over the implications, philosophical as well as health hazards, of the genetic manipulation that has recently become a capability of institutions that sometimes pursue that research irresponsibly or without adequate safeguards. For instance, genetically altering mice and then doing that in a facility that is not at all unbreachable, and assuming that by putting a little moat of water around the place where the mice are, that they might somehow be prevented from escaping in the event of an emergency. The other group, the CHRISTIC Institute, has been active in a very wide range of issues, from human rights, the sanctuary movement regarding refugees in the southwestern part of the country, to, of course, the Iran-Contra schedule. It was the CHRISTIC Institute that filed suit, a suit that is still pending on behalf of two journalists wounded in a CIA-backed assassination attempt that took place against a former Contra leader. And the Florida group would, I'm not as familiar with its history, the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice. I don't know whether it has been around for a long time or is an ad hoc group, but I suppose its name is self-explanatory.
Do you know what city they're based in?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I've not been in direct touch with them, although I have with the other groups.
All right. Any closing thoughts on all of this? I mean, what time is the launch scheduled for one thing?
It is scheduled for, I believe it's about sometime in the early afternoon.
That's ominous. I remember the last early afternoon flight exploded, didn't it?
Yes. Well, this one has a on the books launch time of 1:29 p.m. on Wednesday, on the 12th, that is. And
Isn't the 12th on Thursday?
It may be.
Okay, so it's the 12th, then. It's definitely the 12th.
No, it is definitely the 12th.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to set my watch for that, and hopefully either it won't go off or they'll get some kind of restraining order or something like that. What do you think the chances are right now? I mean, seeing things like this happening in the past and, you know, being a realist, what do you think is going to happen?
Sorum, Three Mile Island, the existence of as many nuclear plants and their operation that we do now gives me a very pessimistic feeling, actually, about the ruling, but that's just a visceral reaction. The judge will presumably rule on the merits of the arguments, and the arguments seem rather convincing to me, and I will be disappointed if it is not delayed and a greater degree of safety is guaranteed. Of course, the reason I guess I confuse Wednesday and Thursday of next week is that it is on Wednesday that Earthwatch will be on the air and taking one last look at the issue before the schedule launch, and hopefully not one last look at the possible recipients of plutonium in the event of a disaster.
What time is that program on?
That is on WBAI at 99.5 megahertz FM at 11:45 p.m. Wednesday night and going on until about 1:30. So at some point between those times, we'll be looking toward Galileo. And there's every expectation that we'll have some additional reporting on it on the investigative news program, Undercurrents, which is on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m., and at 6:45.
Okay, well, I'll be listening, and I'll be watching on Thursday, see what happens. Robert Knight, thanks very much for taking time out this evening to talk to us about this, and hopefully we'll hear more about it in the media to come.
Eric, it's an honor to join you in this mode.
Okay. See you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And that's where we stand as far as the ominous space shuttle, the potential space shuttle of death on Thursday. Who knows what's going to happen? I'd like to hear your opinions. Our phone number is 632-6901. And the organizations that Robert was talking about, Foundation for Economic Trends and the Christic Institute in Washington, D.C., he did not have a phone number for them. He did not have an address, but he did say you could call information. But I say, why should all the people listening right now have to call information and pay, what, 60 cents per call? Multiply that by however many people are listening, 3, 4, that's you know, a couple of bucks there. We'll do it once here, and we'll spring for the 60 cents and find out what the numbers are, and then you can get it for nothing. Yeah, we'll cheat the phone company in our inimitable style. Calling Washington, D.C., information. That's where information is stored. It's 10:32 in the evening.
What city?
Hi, Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
I'm looking for the telephone number for the Foundation for Economic Trends.
Mama.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Here's your number.
Here it comes.
The number is 466-2823. Thank you for calling CNP Directory Assistance.
Well, it certainly was an honor, wasn't it? Okay, well, we got one. They won't let us talk to the operator again, so we have to call back. And, okay, we know how to do that. So the Foundation for Economic Trends, you can reach them at area code 202-466-2823. There isn't enough time to write, so you better call. The Christic Institute in Washington, D.C., we'll get their number next.
What city?
Hi, Washington, D.C.?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I need a number for the Christic Institute. That's C-H-R-I-S-T-I-C.
Yeah.
Thanks.
The number is 797-8106. 797-8106.
Okay, so now we have both. We have the Foundation for Economic Trends at 202-466-2823, the Christic Institute, 202-797-8106. As for the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice, Well, we're not sure what city that is. Okay, I'll spring for Miami. We'll just see if it's in Miami. If it's not there, I really don't know where to go to find it. But if anyone has that number, they can pass it along to us, and we'll be happy to air that. But let's check Miami information and see what the deal is there. It's taking a long time to connect, isn't it?
The number you have dialed is not a long-distance call.
What?
Do not dial the digit 1 before the number you are calling. This is a recording.
I didn't dial the digit 1.
The number you have dialed is not a long-distance call. Do not dial the digit 1 before the number you are calling.
You see what I have to go through, folks?
This is a recording.
I didn't dial the digit 1. It is a long-distance call. It's in Florida, for God's sake. I can't talk to anybody, can I? It's a recording. Ugh. I hate this. I hate this. I've got some words about the telephone strike. It doesn't have anything to do with the telephone strike. This is just computer incompetence. But, all right, let's try that again. Probably got charged premium rate for that. Okay. Florida information. What's the big deal here? Don't dial one. I didn't dial one. It's 10:36. You're listening to Brain Damage.
The number you have dialed is not a long-distance call. Do not dial the digit 1 before the number you are calling. This is a recording.
This is insane. Okay. Operator to the rescue. We need an operator. An operator. That's what we need. We're going to get one. You're going to see the garbage we have to put up with here at the radio station.
Please hold. Your call will be answered by the next available operator.
Why do I feel I'm in some kind of... Yes, hello, operator. I'm trying to reach information in Miami, Florida, and I'm dialing 305-555-1212. I'm getting a recording saying, this is not a long-distance call. Please don't dial 1. And that's all I seem to get.
1. Are you pressing... You're dialing information?
Yes, I'm just trying to dial information.
But it's necessary that you dial 1.
Oh, I'm not dialing 1. They're saying I'm dialing 1. It's a recording, and I can't seem to get past the recording no matter what I do.
Florida. What city?
Is this Miami?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, I'm looking for the number for the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice.
One moment, please.
Because I'm a liberal fool, that's why.
The number is 251-8117. 251-8117.
All right, now you want me to ring it for you?
That's okay. I just needed the number. Thanks very much for your help.
Don't forget the area code 305 before those numbers.
305. Thank you very much. Good night. Okay, so the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice, 305-251-8117. I'd like other people to try calling Miami Information, see if they get that garbage that I just got. But perseverance wins in the end, as usual. Okay, next chapter in our ongoing saga. We'll get back to the space shuttle later on, because that is certainly an important story. You know, plutonium in the air is always something we're concerned with here at USB. But there's also something else, and that is, of course, as if you didn't know, pornography. Pornography, particularly in China. Yes, there is such a thing, and they're very concerned with it. Almost as concerned as the whole Reagan generation is here. And I think the tape that we're about to hear is something that that all of us can learn from. Some of us may want to write this down, write down their methods and their phraseology and stuff like that. Others might just want to sort of recoil into the fetal position and think about the horrible things that are still to come. But this is reality, folks. This is what's going on right now in China. You may have noticed we didn't air the Moscow tape this week because, well, I just didn't make it to the mailbox this week, okay? But I did make it to the mailbox that has the China tapes, and I got a China tape for you. I've got a piece all about pornography and what they are doing to fight this dreaded disease of people who, I think you'll hear the phrase, people who think in a wrong way. This is what they do. They make political mistakes. Yeah, that's it. The greatest phrase I've ever heard. They make political mistakes. And, well, we're just going to play you the tape now. However, the tape is in another room, so I have to run into the other room. But to tide me over till I get to the other room, I'm going to play something that that is, I think, appropriate for the moment. And you will hear the tape from China in just a few seconds.
Has stepped up its efforts to clean up the cultural market. Radio Beijing's Zhao Hong takes a look at a cultural conference held in late August in Beijing.
China's Vice Minister of Culture, Ying Ruocheng, warned the conference members that the changes of the cultural market need urgent attention. Ying Ruocheng says the cultural market has been seriously poisoned by pornographic and offensive publications. Many pornographic books and audio-video products have entered the market. Other publications encourage superstition and make serious political mistakes. These publications have already caused social problems. One investigation found that over 30% of all sex criminals confessed they committed crimes after seeing pornographic products. But recent government action has improved the situation. The most recent national campaign against pornography began last July. Ying Ruocheng says incomplete statistics. The long term. The Ministry of Culture believes its new regulation will provide an answer. The regulation calls for all business-oriented cultural and entertainment organizers to be screened. These businesses must apply for a permit from the local cultural authorities before they apply for their business licenses. And the local cultural authorities will establish a system of inspection with full-time cultural inspectors. They will constantly supervise local cultural business activities. Vice Minister Ying Ruocheng also stresses that healthy cultural and recreational activities deserve more support. He says the purpose of rectifying the cultural market is to help it develop. This development will encourage harmony for China's National Day on October the 1st. For Radio Beijing, I'm Zhou Hong.
Oh, yes, there we go. Radio Beijing here on Brain Damage. And boy, what a bunch of brain damaged individuals they have over there. Cultural inspectors. Can you imagine cultural? I mean, that's Jesse Helms to the letter, right? Cultural inspector number one. God. Oh, hate to be someone with normal feelings in China, that's for sure. Speaking of other hotbeds of activity. Let's take a look at what's going on in the world, and we'll be taking a call soon, so let's make some calls here. Let's get some people on the line. 632-6901, area code 516. We're talking about a lot of things, the potential end of life as we know it, pornography in China, and now the 40th anniversary of East Germany's founding has been filled up with violence. Yes, hours after street battles took place in Dresden, there are reports now of clashes between police and thousands of demonstrators in East Berlin and two other cities. I was in East Berlin. I was in East Berlin a little over a month ago. Boy. Witnesses and television reports say police kicked, beat, and dragged off the protesters. In an apparent effort to prevent another protest, police sealed off an area of East Berlin where people are streaming to watch fireworks. East German leader Erich Honecker is vowing to stick with his hardline communist policies. Honecker made the statement as he wrapped up a meeting with reform-minded Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev, who's since returned to Moscow. And a historic day in Hungary, too, for the first time in the Soviet bloc. And this is interesting. I mean, this is today's news, folks. For the first time in the Soviet bloc, a communist party has decided to go out of business. I feel like I'm reading the April Fool's issue or something. That's right. The Communist Party of Hungary has decided to go out of business. In its place, communist delegates in Budapest have opted to form a Hungarian Socialist Party similar to those in Western Europe. Reform communists have been urging the change for months as Hungary prepares for its first free national elections in 41 years. And calls for a major change are also being heard inside the Soviet Union. Activists in Latvia gathered today and debated plans for the independence of their Soviet republic. The forum was held despite fears the Kremlin could retaliate with economic blockades. And that's another thing I'd like to hear from people about. Are these things going to succeed? You know, these are probably the most interesting times of the century. It's hard to believe. I know we go through our little humdrum lives and watch television and crap like that, not realizing that what's going on today is going to be in history books for centuries to come. I mean, these changes are bizarre, to say the least. Just the things that are going on, you know? I never thought I'd see these kind of changes in the East. I mean, I was just in East Berlin not too long ago. And even then, with the people streaming to West Germany, I knew something was going to happen, but I didn't expect riots in the streets of Berlin. Now, you never expect that, because that's a city that's very tightly under control. Now, it's not, you know, hell like is portrayed to us. It's not people with cameras watching them all the time and sort of a George Orwell type of society. It's, you know, it's not very pleasant if you, you know, try to get a Coke. Like I've said, it's horrible, and there's not very much to buy, and places are overheated and not very comfortable. And that's one of the leading cities in all of Eastern Europe. So, for that reason, it's kind of oppressive, but it's not, people don't suffer horrendously. You know, they do feel kind of constricted, and they certainly do want to get to the West, but there's a bit of exaggeration, too, as far as the way it's portrayed. What's going to happen in the next, probably the next few weeks is going to be extremely dramatic. More dramatic, I think, than Tiananmen Square, if that's possible, because this doesn't stop in one country. You've got East Germany. Look what's happened in Poland. You have now a semi-democratic government there. You have Hungary, reforms in Czechoslovakia, of course the Soviet Union, where all of this started. And let's see what else we have here. Bulgaria, I know. Let's see if I can find that Bulgarian... Bulgarian change barely plods along, okay? Although it may be the Soviet Union's most faithful ally in Eastern Europe, Bulgaria has fallen out of its familiar lockstep with Moscow on the question of democratic change for its 9 million people. Glasnost will come, officials promise, using a word that is the same in Bulgarian and Russian. We do not favor anarchy, said Ivan Katranjev, a foreign ministry official in charge of relations with other Eastern Bloc countries. We prefer discipline in order to develop the country in good shape and to move forward step by step, not by leaps that sometimes could be dangerous for the society. Of course, you can find some people who are not happy with the situation, but you can find such people anywhere. Most people understand the situation well. And, of course, that is debatable. According to today's article in the New York Times, Western diplomats and a small core of dissidents say Bulgarians have grown tired of the firm hand of President Todor Zhukov, who became Communist Party head in 1954, a year after Stalin's death. And at the age of 78, he is Eastern Europe's longest-serving leader. So things are happening there. Not much is happening in Bulgaria, but those statements wouldn't have been made 10 years ago, even 2 years ago, probably. We've heard what's happening in Hungary. We've heard what's happening in East Berlin and Dresden and Leipzig and all those places. It's a historical time for all of Eastern Europe, and I don't know how it's going to reflect upon things here. 632-6901, I've babbled on long enough. Let's see what the people have to say. Good evening.
Hello, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Adam Cohn from Kings Park.
Hey, how you doing, Kings Park? What's going on there? Is there sweeping changes in the streets?
There are sweeping winds in the streets.
Oh, America, yes. Okay, well, what's your opinion of all this?
Let's see. First, I guess to start with the space shuttle thing.
Okay.
Now, doesn't it make sense? Wait, first of all, doesn't it make sense that since there's plutonium going up in the space shuttle, that whatever would be contained in, first of all, would have to be strong enough to keep the nuclear reaction in it from destroying the rest of the satellite that will be carrying it, right?
That's true. I'm not particularly certain when the nuclear reaction takes place. I mean, it doesn't take place on launch, obviously. It's not supposed to take place on launch.
I suppose when it goes into space, because it would be pretty dangerous to have it start. For example, if they had it going on while the space shuttle took off, it would screw up all the space shuttle's instruments.
Well, yeah, certainly, but it's not supposed to do that. We all know it's not supposed to go off.
No, it's not going to.
But the fact that it's there.
Reaction, I mean, it's the same as in any commercial nuclear reactor.
Right.
You know, I really doubt that it would start until it were actually released from the space shuttle.
Right, but we all know how well commercial nuclear reactors work and how many accidents
and
problems
are. Well, how many accidents have there been? 3 Mile Island, no fatalities.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true. There's been a high incidence of cancer there, and we never know. You see, that's the problem.
Also, where was 3 Mile Island?
Where was it?
Yeah, where is it?
Near Harrisburg in Pennsylvania.
Now, in that area, isn't there also a high incidence of cancer anyway because of radon gas?
Radon gas. Is that Harrisburg?
Well, all over that area.
I'm not that familiar with that.
Because of radon gas, I mean, that whole entire area from New Jersey and most of Pennsylvania and all those areas, and even New York City parts of it, radon gas just escapes from the rocks there, something that just naturally occurs, a naturally occurring radioactive gas that happens to give people things like cancer.
Naturally occurring? I've never heard this.
Comes from the rocks. I mean, you know, people say, yes, I hate radiation, but...
Yeah, that sounds like something Reagan said. Are you quoting him by chance? Comes from the rocks, huh?
That's where radon gas comes from. It's in things like rocks. It's a radioactive gas. It occurs naturally. I mean, nobody actually said, hey, let's put some radon gas there and kill people. It's always been there, and it just is there, sort of like there's, you know, dirt on the ground. It's there because of some reaction that occurred a long time ago. The same reason that, I mean, different things produced it, you know, radon gas from producing soil, you know, of course. But radon gas is a naturally occurring gas.
Well, okay, irregardless of whether radon is natural gas or not, what do you think of the whole space shuttle thing? You think there's any risk at all?
No, you see, when it's in space and nuclear reaction starts, nuclear reactions occur at several thousand degrees Fahrenheit.
Uh-huh.
Now, it would whatever it were encased in would have to be strong enough to protect the rest of the satellite or the reconnaissance vehicle from those several thousand degrees.
True.
Now, if the space shuttle blew up, it wouldn't blow up at several thousand degrees.
Okay, well, let's suppose...
But the thing will be safe.
Well, yeah, okay. Theoretically...
The worst it could do is maybe fall down and hit somebody in the head.
Well, no, look, theoretically, what you're saying is true. It should be constructed in that way. But, as we've all seen... These little blunders occur, and maybe somebody will leave a hole in the device that has the plutonium in it, and that will all leak out.
I doubt there'll be a hole in it, because I'm sure that whatever they put it in, they're going to test, because they don't want the satellite to be screwed up.
Yeah, of course they don't want this. No one's saying they want this to happen.
They don't care about people's lives. They wouldn't, which I really don't think is true. They don't want anything to happen to their precious satellite.
Okay.
So I really doubt there are any holes in it. Besides, there are testing methods for this sort of thing that they always put things like this through.
But
and I'm really sure that it'll be, okay, nothing, like I said, the worst thing it'll do, maybe it'll get hot and hit someone in the head, because if the space shuttle pulls up, it'll be warm also. And it'll give someone a knock on the head and burn them, you know.
Well, you realize, though, that you're really putting the fate of many, many people in the hands of these folks that are saying everything's going to be okay. Whether or not you have faith in them, you see?
I have... The thing I have faith in is... Well, the the whoever it was is being very pessimistic about the whole thing. If you look at the whole point is that it'll be safe is, for example, you have this thing, the case that the plutonium will be in, and it can withstand temperatures of up to several thousand degrees. And if you put a temperature on it, you know, a lot less than that, nothing is going to happen.
Unless the actual device is faulty to some degree. And it
which is impossible.
You see, now that's where I always say, wait a minute. When someone says something is impossible, because I really don't, I mean, I'm a bit of an optimist as far as that goes. Nothing is impossible. Anything can happen.
I know that.
I believe that in the positive way and the negative way. So, you know, and I'm really torn here because I like space exploration probably more than anything, and I want to find out these things. But if we proceed without being very careful about certain things, we might lose a lot more than just a space shuttle crew.
A lot of people.
I mean, I'm very upset. I'm very upset by the fact that everything is falling out of the sky. You know, we send these things up into space. Why the hell can't we keep it up in space? Why does everything have to fall back down? You know, it seems like we're missing some fundamental concept somewhere. You know what I mean?
Well, it's called gravity. Yeah, it's a fundamental concept.
Well, I mean, we should be able to keep it up there if we're going to send it and not have these rockets crashing down. Who knows where they're going to crash down? Oh, this huge space station is going to crash down on Earth. We don't know where. We'll have about 5 minutes warning, though. I mean, that's inexcusable. You know, you can't operate a space program that way. Like Skylab, exactly, and like the Soviet nuclear thing that crashed in Canada. We've been very lucky that they've crashed in uninhabited areas, but one day that's not going to happen.
Well, also the chances are that whatever hits the Earth isn't going to hit a highly inhabited area, because first of all, most of the Earth is covered by an ocean, over 70%.
But that's not a basis for taking the risk, because you know it could happen.
I'm aware of that, and if it lands in the water, it'll be pretty bad anyway, even though actually since plutonium is much heavier than water, it'll just sink to the bottom and sort of sit there. And, you know, for example, if it lands at the bottom of the ocean, it's really not going to get into our food supply, considering the bottom of the ocean is pretty deep and nothing really lives there.
Well, it certainly wouldn't after that. And any other thoughts on this whole matter?
Well, yeah, I'm in support of them launching this thing, because the way it seems is they've taken care of, the way they do it, they would take care of any possible problems that could occur in this situation. But another thing about the thing you broadcast from China.
Yeah, the pornography.
That's ridiculous.
Scary, I think, is the word.
Well,
because, I mean, it's not just proposed.
Considering what's been going on in China, I wouldn't consider it scary. I'd consider it pretty, you know, I could have guessed that something like that would happen.
Yeah.
But think about it. Is it really that the people became deranged by viewing these things, or were they already deranged, and that's why they saw them, they would have committed these acts anyway?
Are they deranged at all, and did they commit any acts? You know,
never these people, but whoever, I mean, I doubt that rape doesn't occur in China. But the thing is, did these people commit, you know, rapes because they saw these things?
It's interesting you should say that. First,
already deranged, they would have committed the rape anyway.
First of all, I wouldn't doubt if they're categorizing some sort of deviancy along with rape. You know, like any kind of sexual deviancy is the same thing as rape to them. But if you look at the conclusion that seeing pornography makes you commit these crimes,
really
those are the exact same conclusions that people in our government are reaching.
Oh God! It's like the Chinese government's hardline hard-on policy.
Yeah, that's a good way of phrasing it. Yes, you haven't seen that in the newspapers.
That in the newspaper.
Of course not. You don't see these things in the newspaper because we don't pursue it enough. But
other interesting things happen on Long Island that you haven't mentioned.
Okay, what's been happening? I've been sort of away for the last week, but what's been happening?
Oh, there was that little incident over at Long Island defense contractor.
Oh, the hacker.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to that a little bit later. I have an article about that in front of me, but we'll go into that a bit. But let's stick with the international stuff first for a little while. See if anyone else has any comments on that.
Stuff.
And what's that? What'd you say?
International stuff.
Stuff. Yes.
Today I was at my local. I don't want to give any plugs here, so but some store that everyone probably has in their neighborhood.
And it has numbers in it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And they're not very far apart.
No, and they're not very different either. The one near us doesn't have any magazines anymore.
What?
It's really silly. The one near us has no magazines because the guy that owns it got into a fight with a magazine distributor and now doesn't get any magazines. So it's like the great purge of the local convenience store.
Cultural scanners.
Exactly. There's no reading material anymore, which I imagine suits them fine because people used to go in there and read things and not buy them sometimes. But still, you know, it looks kind of silly to have this big rack with absolutely nothing on it.
Mm-hmm.
But
I can think of a magazine that they could put on the rack that I don't believe they've gotten into a fight with the distributor of.
Well, I'm sure they would. Any magazine they would. But I mean, if you remember, last year they banned Playboy, right? And now in effect they've banned everything. I told you it was going to happen. Well, anyway, you were saying something about your local convenience store.
Well, the vowels out of every magazine they have.
Yeah, right. What's your local convenience store?
The seven something or other.
I mean, what's the story connected to?
The story is that they have in the magazine rack this magazine called Soldier of Fortune, which I happen to look through.
Yeah, they don't ban those, you notice.
I know. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. In the back of it, there are ads for mercs for hire, pretty much. Mercenaries for hire. To do things like, kill your wife or husband or something like that. They don't specifically say that. But they say things like ex-Vietnam vet available for a dangerous mission, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that, and another thing it says, vets wanted to go to Rhodesia non-military paramilitary operation.
Well, that's
like, yeah, non-military, right. So why do you want veterans to go to Rhodesia where they're having a civil war right now?
It's not even called Rhodesia anymore. It's been Zimbabwe for quite a while.
Well, I suppose, somebody would like to change it back to Rhodesia in that case.
I'm sure they would. Well, let's not give those lunatics any more airtime.
Well, they give one particular lunatic 2 hours of airtime.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true.
Not on this radio station, of course. No, I'm talking about one of those commercial ones.
Oh, you are? Who's this?
Any of them.
Oh, well, it's interesting. Now, I don't know, I hope somebody out there is keeping track of all the kids in high school that take their fellow students hostage with their father's Uzi or whatever it is. Because there's been a lot of those going around. And, it's kind of neat to compile it all and see how many there are in a given week. I really don't understand how people can argue that people should have Uzis and people should have guns that pierce bulletproof vests. That's not hunting anymore, you know.
Unless you have some bear with a Kevlar flak jacket.
I mean, why not just give people the right to have everything then? The right to have drugs, the right to do whatever you want to other people. I mean,
here's the problem. A lot of people who are anti-gun say, well, just ban this kind of gun. And they'll, okay, so it'll be banned. But eventually they want to ban all kinds of guns from anybody to have, which I think is a scary thing.
Uh-huh. In other words, the people that like guns see any ban as a stepping stone to banning all guns.
Yeah, as in any... the right to own firearms is a civil right, just like any of the Ten Amendments, the ten amendments in the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to get into a debate about that again.
Any step towards banning one of them, even slightly, you know, could be taken further and further and further until you're not allowed to do crap.
Or do crack, either, for that matter.
Well, that's something that people aren't allowed to do anyway, but...
Well, I don't know. You know, it's...
People that, for example, look at the drug dealers, right? They buy guns and they shoot cops. Do you think enforcing a ban on assault rifles is really going to affect them? Do you think they actually buy their assault rifles from a licensed Winchester dealer? Or something like that.
No, of course not. But if they're hit with a much bigger penalty for even having a gun like that in the first place, then if they mess up on the drug charge, at least I got that to fall back on, and it's some kind of incentive, you know, at least not to be so blatant with it. Because nobody cares anymore. Nobody, you know, cares about hiding the fact that they have these weapons because everybody's allowed to have them.
Have you seen walking around with things like AR-15s?
I don't even know what that is.
It's a nice assault rifle.
Now, how come you? How old are you?
16.
You're 16. How come you know about this? How come you know so much about assault rifles?
Because I happen to like firearms. I don't go around shooting people with them.
Who was William the Conqueror?
William the Conqueror?
Yeah.
He invaded England.
Okay.
And there was some tapestry or something made about him. Where was that? Which tapestry was that? It's sitting somewhere in England right now.
Well, I just know that you answered that a lot slower than you answered the thing about assault rifles, and many kids your age couldn't answer it at all.
I was trying to remember the name of the tapestry.
Okay, well, you see my point. Even if you don't.
Point. I knew William the Conqueror invaded England, the Battle of Hastings. That's it.
Okay.
Okay. And there was a,
Who won the last World Cup?
What last World Cup? I don't even know what the World Cup is.
Aha. Okay, you see the important things.
Is that with the, boats or something?
I gotta go to some more calls, Adam, but, thanks for calling. We'll get to the hacker story in a little while, and,
Whose first name is Brian, who lives in Levittown, who, see what else? Who's known as the Phantom, F-A-N-T-O-M, you mean that, Brian?
The hacker?
Yes.
Okay, I guess that's who I'm talking about, but I don't think it says that here. We'll get to it, though.
Well, that's all factual information.
Okay, well, we'll certainly get to it.
Tell you in his high school who knows him.
Okay, enough of that. We don't want to get sued here. 632-6901, giving out names of minors. We don't need to do that. It's 5 minutes after 11, WUSB Stony Brook, and the program is Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you until midnight, and we're talking about, what are we talking about? Well, the space shuttle possibly exploding and spreading plutonium to one and all. The changes in Eastern Europe, the very exciting things that are happening there, and what the outlook is. What's going to happen, you know? I mean, are there going to be a bunch of democratic regimes now in East Europe? I mean, think of what that's going to mean, you know, for tourists especially, to be able to visit all these nice West European countries in East Europe. That's going to be a trip and a half. What's happening elsewhere in this country, and of course pornography in China, and let's get to the hacking stuff a little bit later, and the phone strike. I want to talk about the phone strike, but I'll get to that in just a little while. Good evening.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm calling about your having problems with the world global annihilation.
The fact that I object to it, you mean?
Well, you object to it, but here in Suffolk County, and I am from the Eastern Bloc countries. Here in Suffolk County, you have politicians vote, taxing you out of existence and making your very general purpose lifestyle very difficult, and you're worried about global problems that really don't exist.
Well, I mean, I think they exist. You don't think they exist?
Well, I've lived there. I've lived in Eastern Bloc countries all my life. The problem to have a nuclear war is just not feasible, and no one will push the last button.
Even by accident?
Even by accident. It is not economical to the societies who are connected or by finances.
Well, that's true, but a lunatic wouldn't care, would he? And if there's a lunatic near that button?
We don't have a democratic president, so no lunatic is near button.
Well, now that opens up a whole argument there as to who a lunatic could possibly be and all that kind of thing.
Well, I lived in other countries that thought that maybe Jimmy Carter himself was a lunatic, but you in your own country thought that Ronald Reagan was a lunatic. Everybody has different opinion of lunatic acting.
Mm-hmm.
But if Russians are not worried about you blowing them up, why would you be worried about them blowing you up?
Well, I think the Russians are very worried about us blowing them up, possibly more than we're worried about them blowing us up now.
Russians are very smart people. They know that you would not risk world immobilization. There's no point to it. There would be nowhere to sell your goods if you destroyed the rest of the world.
Oh, that's certainly true from a capitalist point of view. But if you look at some religious fundamentalists, a lot of them say that world annihilation is part of the whole prophecy, that the whole world gets destroyed and then Christ comes and leads Tammy Faye over to heaven or something like that. It's all part of the big prophecy, you know, and with that kind of person getting kind of close to power, because the TV evangelists have a good deal of power even after this whole Jim Baker incident. With that, you have to be a little bit concerned about just what these people are actually thinking and doing.
You have gone down trail with Goldilocks. It makes no sense what you said. It has nothing to do with the prophecies. It has to do with world profit. If money cannot be made, the decision is not made. Of course, there will not be world war, because world war will make no money to be made. Everyone will be dead. No one will purchase goods. No one will make money. Money, munitions makers made money in other world wars due to fact that people bought weaponry. Weaponry produced money. Money is money makes the world go round.
If I could just interrupt for a second there. Do you think that in a nuclear war there will be no survivors? Or do you think the people that actually start the nuclear war will make some kind of arrangement for themselves to be protected in whatever ghastly way it winds up being, but actually somehow protecting themselves so that they actually eliminate a few billion people and are able to start over with things more in control their way?
Whatever people are left will not be good consumers. No money will be made from survivors. That's why no war will happen.
Well, like I don't think I'm gonna change your views as far as that goes. I mean, I see what you're saying to a degree.
No.
I see what you're not saying to a bigger degree.
It would be a catastrophe where someone would start a nuclear war, but this nuclear war hopefully would be limited to major cities. Hopefully, New York City itself, a cesspool of corruption, would go first, and the world would be better if limited nuclear war did take place. Moscow is not the greatest place either. Prague, no good. Sicily, many places are terrible in this world. If they were eliminated, maybe the government centers be eliminated, then you would not have this big controversy, because governments cause trouble, not people. People don't kill people. Governments kill people.
Okay, you wanna round this up with like one stirring comment, and then we'll go to the next call?
Yes. The only thing wrong with Russian roulette is not enough Russians play it.
And with that, I thank you for calling, sir. And also, very important announcement, folks. It's 11 minutes after 11 and 11 degrees Celsius. I've never seen that before. And 11 Celsius means 52 Fahrenheit, and that's truly an incredible moment. Let's just sort of share this together until it ends. 11, 11, 11 degrees. Boy. Okay, well, let's take some more calls. 632-6901, and feel free to bring up anything else that you feel is pertinent or important or anything like that. Good evening.
Yes, I was wondering about the last caller.
I was too. I think we all were.
Yeah, one thing. I have read a thing before where 98% of the population, which is about 4 billion on Earth, right?
5 billion now. No, it's 5 billion people on the Earth now.
All right, so 98% of that, that's about...
I was in the city yesterday, in fact, and there's something that counts the number of people that are, I don't know how it does it, but there's this big ticker that says how many people there are in the world, and it was 5,200,000,000 something.
Well, that, I think, goes by how... There's a certain thing of how many people are born per second, and that's multiplied by the second. It's really weird. It's just that's how they figured out, I guess.
Yeah. It's too bad you can't find out what number you are, but
yeah.
Never mind that. What's your question?
So about the nuclear war, and 90% will die in the initial attack. That's 4 billion something million people, and
it's all the freeloaders, yeah.
Yeah, several more percentage of, you know, I think it's around 80% of will die from diseases and hunger and stuff in the next. I think it's 10 to 20 years, and then I think it's by 1,000 years later, which is when the radiation is gone, nuclear winter is gone.
Uh-huh.
The population, they calculated it all out. Population is expected to be around, I think it was 100 people on Earth.
100 people, huh?
Yeah. And now the thing about where, like, you said where the people are going to, like, go in hiding so that they don't die?
Yeah. Namely, the president and all the people responsible for the whole thing in the first place, yeah.
Well, they're developing cryogenics, which is cold sleep. It's where they freeze somebody. They remove the blood from the body, and they freeze you. Well, you're not dead, but they freeze you. They did it to a beagle, and it lasted something like 4 years in a cryogenics.
Four years or 40?
I think it was just one of them. It had a 4 in it. It was like 4 or 40. And they did it by the process of freezing the dog and before they froze it, they removed all the blood out of it, but keeping circulation to the brain and major organs.
Okay.
And, well, they haven't gotten anything to do with, any, like, legal thing to do with on humans yet, you know, how they have to have, like, certain certificates saying they're allowed to experiment on humans.
Oh, well. What happened to the dog?
It was fine. It did not age over the time it was frozen.
Well, somehow that kind of experiment doesn't make me feel very good.
So if this is able to be done to humans, it's going to be very expensive, and only the rich people are going to be able to do it.
Of course.
If they survive a nuclear war, they're going to die off anyway because there's going to be no one to help them, or there's going to be no servants for them.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Any other thoughts?
Yes. I know you probably don't want to talk to us, but Soldiers of Fortune.
Yeah.
The kid made them sound like they're murderers. They're really not. The idea of a soldier of fortune is that they get hired by a government of another, you know, another government, like the, what was the country they mentioned? Where he mentioned something.
Zimbabwe, Rhodesia.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, they get hired and they go to that country and they fight for whoever they're hired by. And they're really not murderers in the sense that if fighting in a war was murder, there'd be a lot of people to arrest.
To be honest, sir, I agree with what you're saying here because if you answer an ad to fight in an army, you're not doing anything really different than somebody who joins the army.
Yes.
Okay, it's just a question of where your allegiance lies, and I think that's with the individual. What I object to is the fact that these people are trading guns like baseball cards, and, you know, forgetting the fact that guns are being used in a lot of the most horrible crimes that take place in this country, and they're really, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's complete loss of control as far as what is accessible and what is not. There's nobody that's safe, and there's nobody that can't get something like this.
Yeah, and another thing,
it's not the way it should be.
Yeah, with banning weapons, a lot more crimes are committed with shotguns and other hunting weapons than are committed with all these exotic assault rifles. Because most of these assault rifles cost too much for anybody to buy. Even drug users who have, like, thousands of dollars. An average assault rifle goes for something anywhere from $40,000 to $4,000.
So we don't have to worry about rich people doing that. Well, yeah, I don't see the point, you know. I'm kind of a simple person, I guess, but I just don't see the point of all these automatic weapons unless, you know, there's some kind of serious crime involved. You know, you don't go hunting with an automatic weapon, do you?
No, but you can, but it's kind of stupid.
It is kind of stupid, and, you know, I mean, I just don't see the point. I really don't.
But it's a lot like drugs. You can't ban guns without people still getting, you know. If we ban drugs, people still do them.
That's what I said a few weeks ago. I said, you know, if we're going to have guns, we should have drugs then. And if we're not going to have drugs, then let's not have guns. But let's not be hypocritical and say, oh, you can't do this, but anybody can have guns, you know?
We're already saying that, and it's not working. Cops are still being gunned down by people with Uzis.
Well, wait, there's no gun control in this country at all.
Yeah, well, the automatic weapons and sub-automatic weapons.
Uh-huh, there's no ban on them. Bush won't sign it. He won't go for that.
Yeah, because he probably knows. It's just what I'm saying. It's like drugs. You can't control it.
Then why are they trying to control drugs?
It's not going to work. Believe me, they're gonna do something really stupid, and people are just going to start... It's going to start a civil war in the United States. The drug users versus everybody else. That's all that's going to happen. Alright. You know how they arrested that guy from South America? They took him up here.
The guy from Colombia, yeah.
Yeah, there's already been a few attempts on people's lives, and there's even suspected attempts on Bush's children.
I don't know if that's really true, but yeah, they are certainly publicizing that in the media, right. It's a real-life James Bond situation, I know.
So, if they go and, like, send soldiers down to South America, which they haven't done, thank God, so as many people as we killed down there, there's drug users that are so crazy. You just tell them, they'll just tell them to kill somebody, and they'll go.
Oh sure.
Pat, they're worse than they're like Iranians. They'll just run into a place
with
explosives.
Wait. I mean, they're like maybe Iranian terrorists or something like that. But you know, I know Iranians, and that's not a fair statement. But
excuse me.
Now the thing is, you know, with drugs, as far as you, an individual, you only end up hurting yourself. Drug dealers, on the other hand, yes, they hurt other people, but in the end, it's the individual's decision whether or not to take drugs. However, if you carry around a gun, you hurt a lot of other people if you use it. You know, if you use drugs, you hurt yourself. If you use guns, you hurt others. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
I
think there's a difference in the two, you know, and why you have to keep a much tighter control over guns than over drugs, because drugs, you know, it's a one-man decision. In the end, it's a one-man decision. I mean, you could say, yeah, drug dealers are responsible for killing lots of people, but not very many people are forced to take drugs. I mean, by peer pressure, yes, but it's not crammed down their throats. You have to have some kind of education in you to keep yourself from doing that.
That works with citizens of the country, but there's a lot of drug users that live in the United States that aren't citizens. So there's no way to keep check on them. And it's very hard to keep check on even individual citizens who own weapons.
Right, I know, but we have to start somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we could say this, and those are reasons never to have any kind of control whatsoever, but how come we don't ask those questions about anything else, you know? Yeah, I mean, okay, there's, you know, if we ban murder, people are still going to murder people, so let's not ban murder, you know? It's I'd like to see that logic applied somewhere else so that we could see how ridiculous it really is. You see what I'm saying?
It's really weird the way government works.
Uh-huh.
Somebody will kill somebody, and then they'll get arrested, then they'll get punished.
Uh-huh.
But
how should it be?
It's really that it doesn't work. Somebody's dead. You can't help that. It's punishing the guy. It's like slapping him in the face or in the hands. It's not going
to
work.
Yeah, it's become sort of a procedure that we have to follow, but nobody really knows why or what good it does. Right. I see what you're saying. Sending somebody to jail for, you know, 12 to 18 for this crime doesn't do a damn thing. They either come out worse or they don't, you know, they don't learn anything. We don't benefit. What's the point? And I'm not saying, you know, killing the person is any better, because that doesn't do anything either.
That's true.
I think the only thing that would accomplish something is an understanding of why this happens and a way to prevent it before it happens. You know, curing the disease instead of treating the symptoms.
Yeah.
But enough of that. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay, thanks.
All right. 632-6901. I really, you know, for those people out there, I don't want to get into another debate on guns, because I've done that about maybe 50 times in the last year. And I don't want to do it anymore, you know? It's enough. It's like talking about abortion. I'm no Bill Baer, that's for sure. Okay, hacker story. Let's see what's going on here. Okay, Levittown teenager. Levittown, Long Island, yes. Who was arrested this week for breaking into Grumman's computer system. Had a 5-year-old manual that gives explicit instructions on how to break into Vax computers over telephone lines, information that is among the most widely circulated in the computer underground. And excerpts from the manual, which is available on hundreds of electronic bulletin boards used by... why do they always put hackers in quotes in these articles? I mean, come on, hackers. Yeah, that's the word, hackers. You don't have to put it in quotes anymore. Anyway, the bulletin boards used by hackers across the United States were among materials seized by police from the 15-year-old's home. Now, the guide, which is referred to as the Legion of Doom Technical Guide, and this is something I've had for a while, and it's funny to see it finally in the newspaper here. It's called the Legion of Doom Technical Guide. It tells how to determine if the computer reached by dialing random telephone numbers is a Vax computer, which is a popular mini-computer manufactured by the Digital Equipment Corporation, quite a few here on campus. Also to tell you what common passwords, which are supposed to be deleted or altered at the customer's site, are built into Vax computers at the factory. In other words, those are demo accounts or default accounts, actually, where when you get a computer, you have certain accounts that have these passwords assigned to them. You're supposed to change them to something else, you know, but when you start out, it has to have something, otherwise you have no way of getting into the system. So it says in the manual, okay, use the demo account with the password demo or something else, and anyone who has a copy of that manual will know the password and how to get in. And that's apparently what happened at Grumman this week, or actually over the last substantial bit of time, from what I understand. The manual also said how to give specific commands for operating the computer, including methods for creating passwords and increasing access within the system. The youth had apparently been able to gain high-level operator privileges within the VAX computer, which, for example, allowed him to create new passwords and accounts. Now, Grumman has refused to allow its technical staff to discuss the incident or explain how a break-in could have occurred. However, yesterday, a Grumman spokesman, Wayman Jones, did say there were some military-related data and programs on the computer the team is accused of gaining access to. Jones said he got access to the operating program for a military application, but didn't say anything more. The youth periodically dialed into the computer. He was not detected on the system until 2 weeks after he first entered. And this guy Jones continued to maintain that the company caught on almost immediately. But other experts say that the youth, whose name was not released because of his age, appeared to have exploited security flaws of the most elementary sort, which, believe me, is nothing new, precisely the type of information contained in the guide excerpts. The guide, now this is wrong here, this is what it says in Newsday Today. The guide was written by a former Long Island resident who has been identified only by the electronic handle of Lex Luthor. Now, I know Lex Luthor is a friend of mine. He lives in Florida, and he's always lived in Florida. However, there was someone else that this reporter is probably thinking of that used to live on Long Island that's a member of this computer underground called the Legion of Doom that used to live here that now lives in Florida, but he is not Lex Luthor. That's somebody else. Anyway, enough said about that. That's pretty much what happened there. And if we learn more on that particular subject, we'll certainly tell you. And also, there's a neat little piece today about a virus in a computer system at Nassau Community College. Actually, it could be anywhere. The fact that Nassau Community College is mentioned here doesn't really mean anything. But students and faculty at that college have been warned that a computer virus is now in the school's computer system and that they should take precautionary measures to lessen the chances of losing valuable data. College spokesman Bob Allen yesterday acknowledged that the memo had gone out, explaining that basically it's a precautionary thing to make people aware so they don't lose valuable data on their disks. Now, computer viruses are commands buried in computer operating programs that are designed to replicate themselves in other programs and thus grow throughout a system. As they grow, they can cause a number of problems, including using too much computer space or writing over programs with gibberish. So far, said Allen yesterday, it has been isolated to just two pieces of hardware, one belonging to a faculty member in the computer department and one in a special computer used by handicapped students. They segregate handicapped students to a computer. That's interesting. However, by evening, college officials said they had found other computers infected with the virus. The memo said in part, there is a widespread virus on campus in computers and that computer users should take a number of precautions, warning against using disks of any colleagues and advising that only school-authorized disks be used. College officials said they were unsure where the virus had originated, but that earlier indications were it had not begun at an on-campus computer. They said there was no way of telling if it was connected to the threatened Columbus Day virus that computer experts nationally have been warning against. Experts say there are several viruses rumored to be infiltrating computers across the country that are to kick into action sometime after Monday, Columbus Day. No, 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 that is wrong. Oh, boy, can't they get anything right on these stories? Monday, yes, okay, Monday is Columbus Day, technically. That's when we celebrated. But Columbus Day actually is on Thursday, or something, October 12th, isn't that right? And it's part of the October 13th, Friday the 13th virus. Some people are calling it the Columbus Day virus because I imagine at midnight on the 13th or on the 12th or whatever, that's when it happens. So some people think it's the 12th, some people think it's the 13th, but the computer virus is set for next Friday, and not tomorrow, or Monday, whatever day that is. Thomas Taylor, Director of Academic Computing at Nassau Community College, said these computer viruses attach themselves to different codes and propagate shamelessly.
The number to Grumman had been posted for several months on local computer bulletin boards.
Uh-huh.
But unfortunately, at the moment, I don't know what it is. However, it had been posted several months before this thing happened, and nobody had been able to get in until this kid happened to call one day, luckily,
Helen, do you think this kid should be punished? Should he have the book thrown at him?
Well, hold on. Let me just finish this. He was the reason he got in is pretty much because the Grumman technical person screwed up. There's a technician who called before him who failed to
didn't hang up the phone.
Didn't hang up the phone properly. Or the problem he hung up the phone without going through the proper command.
So the next person could call in.
The next person who calls in, just to continue from where this technician stopped up, finished.
So, okay, for people that don't use computers, imagine if you call something, you call a person somehow, right? And instead of, you don't say goodbye to the person, and by hanging up on the person, the next person that calls that number is connected where you left off. That's pretty much what we're talking about here. On computers, you have to have a certain kind of sequence called a logout sequence. If you don't do that, the next person that calls in finds themselves in the place where you were before you hung up. That's as simple as I can get.
How this particular kind of computer works.
Yeah. And that's what happened. So let me use that to ask you the question again. Do you think this kid is guilty of some kind of crime? Do you think he should be punished?
I think the technician is guilty. I don't think the kid is guilty at all.
Uh-huh. The kid just, did what a kid normally does.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, I mean, kids are naturally curious. You have a child, he walks around, and parents have to make sure the kid doesn't get into anything dangerous, like electric sockets, because it's basic human nature. People are curious. Somebody sees something, and they wonder what it is, or something is there, and they know it's there, but they don't really know much about it, so they want to go look at it. For example, people saw the moon for thousands of years. And they said, I wonder what it looks like up close. So eventually they went up and looked.
And they didn't get punished, I don't think, did they?
No, not that I know of.
No. But, that's why...
National Enquirer did run stories about them, and that's punishment enough for any crimes they might have committed.
I've always said, I'm a bit of a crazy person as far as this goes, but I think that hacking is something...
Healthy.
Natural. It's healthy. It's natural. It's what human beings do. It's just asking a lot of questions, because every time you hack, in effect, you are asking a computer lots of questions, because you type something, the computer responds, and each response is an answer to a question that you send it. And, of course, if you're doing this to make money or to steal something, then, of course, but you should be charged with stealing something or, making money that doesn't belong to you. But the actual hacking part of it, I don't think that's the crime,
The fact is, the kid didn't damage anything.
No, I don't think he did. It hasn't been...
He didn't erase anything. He didn't destroy anything. If he did what's called downloading files, it means they have something there. It's like running it through a copying machine,
mm-hmm.
and you have a copy of it now. It doesn't destroy the original thing. It works the same way pretty much as a copying machine does in that respect.
Now, if having possession of this item hurts the corporation in some way.
He didn't lose any money. Okay, so if
let's say it hurts, found out
that he was on it, fine. They should have fixed the problem that allowed him to get in. That way he wouldn't be able to get in anymore.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much what you do. If somebody breaks into your house, you buy a new lock. You don't,
If you catch the guy breaking into the house, you do punish him.
Yeah, if you have a gun, you shoot him or something.
Well,
call the police and they come and shoot him.
That would be something, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Shoot the guy over the phone.
I'll come shoot him for you or something.
Yeah.
But, you don't... Most of the time, people just buy a new lock or something instead of sitting, hiding behind the door, waiting for them, leaving the door open.
In effect, not only leaving the door open, but greeting the person when he comes in, because when you call somebody on the phone...
Come in, I'm not home.
In effect, you're knocking on their door, they're opening the door, and they're saying, hello, how are you? Either go away and they hang up the phone, or they say, come in and talk to me.
They
continue talking. When you call a computer, you're calling a person continually talking, and you're staying as long as you're... allowed to stay, and then when you decide to leave, you say goodbye, and that's it. And that's the way it works on the computer too.
The technician that screwed up should be fired, because he was as much as if the kid gets convicted, he was as much as at fault for letting the thing happen in the first place.
Hey, you know what we should charge him with? You know what that technician should be charged with? Contributing to
delinquency of a
minor. That's the phrase, because that's what he's doing. This minor is now a delinquent, right? Because he got caught, and it's because of the technician that he got caught. Hey, that's a great charge. I gotta suggest that to somebody. Yeah, that's a good one. Any other thoughts on this?
Yeah. Let's see. They even got the name of the thing wrong. It's not the technical guide. It's the Legion of Doom Technical Journal. And it's a electronic newsletter
It's updated, period. I mean, it's not just one book or something.
They say book, like you can go to the store and buy it.
Yeah, I know. It's something that you get off computers and you print it out yourself, and it's kind of crazy. Like I said many times, every time I've been involved with the media and they've said something that I know something about, they've gotten fundamental facts wrong.
Oh, if they get things wrong about simple things like this, imagine when there are murder cases. All
sure.
The little details they must screw up on.
Murder cases, political intrigue, international events, all kinds of things. They mess everything up. But that's something else. Okay, well, I think you've had more than enough to say on this.
The object to is they call these people, first of all, they call them whiz kids. Now, if they were such whiz kids, why do they get caught, first of all?
Uh-huh.
And second of all, whoever this was, sure, he might have had some knowledge of the subject, but, I mean, a whiz. Well, he was lucky. That's how these things usually happen.
It's not that they're whiz kids. It's
they're
the fact that
lucky.
the people running the system are dumb clods. That's really what it is.
If the security people in Grumman had half the brain of a hamster, this wouldn't have happened at
well,
all.
Well, it's not just Grumman. It's all kinds of places
in
that have
case,
large computer things.
Even all of them, even if there were a thousand of them, collectively, if they had half the brain of a hamster, it wouldn't have happened. A hamster, a female hamster, something comes to attack her kids, that hamster will be all over it. But
right.
These Grumman people, they just sort of sit there and say, uh-oh, something happened. Hey, I know, we'll call the police. It's like the hamster, you have some tarantula gets into the cage and the hamster bangs on the glass and waits for the owner to come.
Well, this hamster analogy is really unique, I'll have to say that. Anyway, thanks for calling. Good evening. It's 1136. Our phone number, 632-6901. Good evening.
Eric, you're a pro.
I just don't like that voice. I'm sorry. But perhaps if he was a little bit friendlier, you know? I don't know. Something about that voice. What is it? I don't know. Can't someone reduce that mad din of sirens? What can be done about reducing the often intolerable noise levels in many parts of New York City? Worst of all are the sirens, and why cannot flashing lights or some new technology suffice, at least most of the time, to clear the way for emergency crews on the streets? Other cities I have lived in do not have such infernal rackets, dozens of times a day, and even in the small hours of the morning. The sirens of ambulances, fire trucks, official cars, and the police raise the tensions of New Yorkers like me, who hate excessive noise and perhaps cost as many lives from hypertension as they save. Blatant horn blowing to save a tenth of a second adds to the din of a city that a few years ago made a great uproar over the noise of three Concorde flights a day out of John F. Kennedy Airport. Yet, even on weekends and in the early morning hours when streets are relatively empty, I hear, or am awakened by, deafening processions of sirens, which can be heard for 10 or more blocks before and after they pass. If there must be sirens, this city should at least lower their decibel level. Those words spoken by James P. Harrison in the New York Times letters section. I'm sorry, Mr. Harrison, but I like sirens. I don't care what you say. I like sirens in the city because it's a sign of life. It's a sign of just the way, the craziness of New York. I spent a few days wandering around the city this week and doing various things, driving in the city for one. Oh, I love driving in the city because everyone's crazy. You know, they cut people off and no one really thinks anything of it. You know, it's just like that's life in the jungle. Somehow everyone sort of makes it through. But the sirens are just like putting it all to sound, putting that crazy, hectic pace of the city into sound. I mean, the subways, louder than any subway I've ever seen in any city I've ever been to. Dirtier, smellier, smokier. And depressing to some people, but I find it kind of intriguing, I guess is the word. So I say keep the sirens. Keep the noise, keep the dirt, keep the smog. Otherwise, we just won't be able to call New York anymore. But I'll tell you one thing that gets me upset, folks. One thing that I've just had a bit enough of. Bit enough? No, I've had a bit too much of is this phone strike, okay? It's really starting to get me crazy here. And I really went berserk the other night on a street in New York. I was trying to call somebody, right? You know, I was looking for a payphone. I mean, there's plenty of payphones. That's one thing about New York that's better than all those other cities I've been to. You know, London, Berlin, all the cities I've been wandering around this summer, it's always hard to find a phone. And when you find a phone, it's usually the wrong kind. Usually it's that they put the card phones all over the place. And if you don't have a card, you're screwed because you can't make a call without the card. And how do you get the card? I don't know. And there's always long lines of people behind those few phones that still take coins. But in New York, no problem. All the payphones take coins. And, of course, you have those other kinds of payphones that rip you off. But if you're smart, you can avoid those. There's usually plenty of real payphones that you can make real phone calls with. However, nasty thing about this whole telephone strike, which has been going on now for, what, 2 months? Long time. Really long time. They don't tend to fix things as fast as they usually do. Sometimes they don't fix it at all. And I went to a payphone, a bank of two payphones. Actually, there was this one guy jabbering away on one of them, so there's no way I could get to that. But I went to the other one, picked it up, and as is always a habit with me, and a lot of people don't do this, you really should, because it's a good precaution when you pick up a phone. Blow into the mouthpiece and see if you can hear the sound of you blowing into the mouthpiece in your earpiece. On this particular occasion, I picked it up, blew into it, and heard nothing, which told me that the mouthpiece didn't work, and if I made a call to someone that I was going to communicate with, I'd be able to hear them, but they would not be able to hear me. And that sort of takes away quite a bit of what a telephone conversation is supposed to be all about. So that phone wasn't working. I said, okay, phone's not working. I can walk to another phone. Went to another bank of phones, and they weren't there. It's just a hollow space where these two phones used to be. Just no. Well, actually, there was a bit of the phone left. There was the coin return mechanism that was still there, but the whole phone wasn't there. And the other one, there was nothing there at all. So that wasn't there either. Went across the street, picked up another phone, no dial tone at all, dead. Picked up another phone, dial tone, no mouthpiece. Okay, went down the block. Went through this a few more times, you know. Finally, I found a phone where someone had just gotten off the phone. Okay? They had just gotten off the phone, and I picked it up, got a dial tone, blew into the mouthpiece, heard me blowing into the mouthpiece in the earpiece. I was on a roll. This phone was working. And I put my quarter in. In the top of the phone there, went right into the phone like it's supposed to. A lot of times, a lot of things that happen, the quarter just comes right back out. You know, it doesn't even take quarters, and you know, how do you make a phone call then? There's other ways to make phone calls, but this particular time I was using a quarter. So anyway, I put it in, and by some horrible, horrible, drastic miscalculation, I dialed the wrong number. I didn't dial a wrong number that somebody picked up. I dialed a wrong number that gave me a recording saying that the number had been changed. You don't get charged for those, fortunately. And I hung up the phone and heard the sound of my quarter jumping into the payphone forever. And that, my friends, is when you could say I lost it. Yes, you could definitely say that, because I sort of went into a screaming frenzy, throwing the receiver into the phone, smashing the phone with my hands, kicking the pedestal that held the phone up, and a small dog that went by, too. I like kicking those kinds of dogs. But then I got on the phone, because you can get a dial tone even without putting a quarter in, and I called the operator, and I said, look, I've had it. I spent half an hour looking for this phone. I found a phone that actually seems to make calls, and then it robs my quarter. This is ridiculous. How am I supposed to make a phone call? How do I do it? Please tell me. They asked me, what number were you calling? And I told her. I said, that was my last quarter. I can't make any more calls because I don't have any quarters, and I've been walking all around town trying to make a call. Please connect me. Please. And you know what? She did. She connected me for nothing. She connected me to the number that I was calling. It was like a religious experience almost. And she connected me. And it rang. And the person picked up and I said, hello. And then I started talking, And as I was talking, I was aware of this clicking noise as the operator was disengaging. But as the operator disengaged, she also somehow disengaged me. And before I knew it, the friendly dial tone had come back. People tell me that my face turned to color, that they've never seen a human face turn before. And they asked me if I was all right. I just advised them to stay away. I called back another operator, and I was not so fortunate with this one. As I explained the situation to her, she suggested in her infinite wisdom how I could make this call without putting a quarter into the payphone. She said, "Sir, do you have a calling card?" I said, "Yes, I have a calling card, and I'm well aware that calling card calls are more expensive than regular payphone calls." And she said, "Oh, no, that's not true, sir. I mean, I'm sure that this will be a reasonable charge and that it won't be something that you know, you'll regret for the rest of your life." So I said, "Okay, I'm an energetic kind of person that likes to take risks. Tell me how much this would cost to call this number that's a block away from me." And she said, "Well, in addition to the charge for the call, which I believe is about 40 cents or something like that, there's a surcharge of another 50 cents. So the whole thing would cost only 90 cents, and it would show up on your phone bill." And I said, "Wait a minute. I'm paying a surcharge. Why am I paying a surcharge? You should pay the surcharge. You're the people that have all the phones broken in Manhattan. You're the folks that took my quarter for no reason at all. Why am I paying a surcharge?" She said, "Well, you know, sir, you have to pay a surcharge on your calling card call." "But I don't want to make a calling card call. I want to make a regular quarter phone call. Regular local call. That's all." And, you know the kind of person you talk to where you just can't make any progress? She just kept saying, "Well, sir, you know, you can make this call. It'll only cost you 90 cents and it'll show up on your phone bill." Got nowhere with her. Nowhere whatsoever. And folks, I didn't make the call. At least not that way. I had to make it a different way. And, you know, this whole thing is out of control. Completely out of control, because this strike has been going on for 2 months. You have to wait over half an hour if you call the business office to find out something about your account, you know. You have to wait, hear lovely music, but, you know, you really could be doing other things at the same time. And by the time you get connected, they tell you, "Well, we can't do anything, sir, because of the strike. We have no access to this information, you know. Please call us after the strike, and we'll be glad to deal with it then." As if I'm supposed to remember all the phone calls I've made over the last 2 months and which ones I'm entitled to credit for and which ones I'm not entitled to credit for, you know. It's totally insane. But the real clincher here, folks, the real clincher is the fact that we don't get any kind of a discount for this. We have to pay full price. Now, do you think the phone company is suffering? The phone company is not suffering because we're paying full price. They're not paying their workers. Did you know that? When people go out on strike, they don't get paid. So all the people that are on strike aren't getting paid. Where do you think that money is going, huh? We're paying full price. They're not paying their workers. Phone company's doing just great. The only thing they're not doing is their job. They're not installing new lines. They're not fixing phones. The only thing they do with any kind of consistency is shut off people who don't pay. And that I know from some folks that have gone through that over the last few weeks. It's an outrage. It really is. And it's enough to drive some people mad. I inquired a gentleman that I saw smashing a phone to bits with a crowbar, why he was doing that. And he said to me, "Well, sir, this phone took 50 cents from me, and it was my last 50 cents, and I have no way of making a phone call." You know, the usual reason, the same reason that I went berserk the other night. And if you ask, you know, a phone company representative why all the phones are broken, they'll say, "Oh, the union people are out there breaking phones on purpose." I say it's people break phones that are already cheating them. You know, you don't smash a phone that's in perfect working order for no reason. You smash it because it's struck the first blow against you. And when a phone does something like that, when a phone takes your hard-earned money, just sort of steals it and then sits there grinning at you, well, that's something no man can stand by and let happen. So that's why you see so many phones that are blown to bits, you know? Anyway, that's how I feel about this whole situation. Sorry if I got a bit emotional there, but, you know, it's only a quarter. I know, it's a little bit of money, but, boy, I'll tell you, when you walk around the streets just trying to make a simple phone call, I mean, I found that that's the one thing that I really can't stand is when I can't do a simple thing like make a phone call. You know, it's such a simple thing. We take it for granted, you know, and it becomes essential. It becomes something that you have to do, you know, in order to say to somebody, hey, I'm going to be 5 minutes late. But if it takes you 25 minutes to be able to say that, obviously you're not going to be able to say that by the time you get around to it, if the person is even still there at all. It really, it's messed me up quite a few times. I'm sure it's messed people out in the audience up quite a few times. And well, I guess what really gets me upset more than anything is the fact that we're just expected to sit back and take it. I hate that. 632-6901, that's a telephone number. We only have 10 minutes left, so get on the phone if your phone is working, and give us a call. Good evening.
Phone company, the message is scrolled on payphones and Mr. Radio all suck.
Intelligent man. Good evening.
Yes, my dad works for the telephone company, and I have one argument against you.
Okay.
And that is the fact that you're saying that just because, like, there's nobody working, really, that they're taking your money and you're not getting anything back for it. What you're getting for it is that people have to work four times as long as they usually do, and my dad has, he's in management,
uh-huh.
and he now is like, I can't explain it, he's doing like 10 times as much work as he normally does.
Is he getting paid 10 times as much?
No.
Then where's that money going?
It's going to all the people that are actually on the in the cars and stuff, going back and forth, repairing stuff.
Yeah, but they have not replaced the people that are on strike, have they?
So they can't, because...
I know they can't, but they're not spending the same amount of money. They're making money on this strike.
Not really, because if you gotta think, what is it, they spliced, what is it, the light cables, what is that?
Fiber optic cables?
Fiber optics.
Yeah.
And if you cut it in the middle, you have to repair a whole, like, a line. It goes in, fiber optics goes in sections of really long cables.
Uh-huh.
And if you splice it in the middle, you have to replace a whole cable.
It's very tedious, I know.
That costs a lot of money. That's where that's going to. For what everything they do, they have to put money into. And they have to put people into that. But they don't have the people, but they have the money. And they're putting the money into what the people can do. So the people that are doing what they can are getting paid for what they're doing.
Sorry, I'm kind of dizzy right now, but...
kind of lost,
yeah. But my point is that their expenses might be a bit more because they have to fix some more things, although, you know, the allegations that the strikers are doing this are not really proven, you know, because you need special kind of equipment to cut those things, you know?
And they have access to it.
But they're on strike.
They don't have... See, the thing is, when you go on strike, there's no book somewhere that says, he's on strike.
But if you're on strike, you don't have access to the equipment anymore, you see?
Yes, but the people that worked where the equipment was could go in there and steal the equipment.
Well, that's possible, I suppose, but
that's what they're accusing them of doing.
Right. But, you know, there still has not been any substantial proof as to exactly who's doing that. But, you know, besides those have been very highly publicized, but there's been, you know, maybe a dozen or so instances of that. That's, you know, that's not that much compared to the entire area and all the money that's coming in from the customers, you know, to justify that.
Also, they have to pay for the men they brought in from the south. They brought in a few workers from, I think, the Carolinas and down south and down around there.
Right, but you see, if they had actually brought in the same number of people they had replaced, then there would be no service reductions. My point is there are big service reductions, but no price reductions, and we're suffering. The people are suffering, and we're losing money because there's a lot of things that we're not reporting that should be reported, a lot of credit we're not getting, you know? I mean, if you call the credit people, they say, well, wait until after the strike and report it then. I mean, how are you supposed to keep track of all that, you know? Our lives don't revolve around the little phone calls we make.
But you got to understand, it's not the company's fault. It's the striker's fault, because the company is reduced in what it can do, and
maybe they just can't reduce the prices soon enough, because when you reduce the prices, that has to do with the phones. You have to fix phone the payphones for that. And the people that fix the payphones are the people that are destroying it that are on strike.
Well, not necessarily. That has not been proven. It could just be regular vandals. But the fact of the matter is, the phones break down as a matter of course, and they're just not being fixed.
Because the people are on strike.
Correct. So we're not getting the service that we pay for. I pay a service charge every month on my phone bill, and that service isn't just for that phone. It's for all the things that the phone company does, and they're not doing it now. You see what I'm saying?
But you can't really blame it on the company, because the company is doing what they can.
They're doing what they can, but they're also making out quite well because of this. Because all that money is still coming into them, and they don't have to pay it to the people that are on strike. That's my point. Okay, so we have to go to another call.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, though. Good evening.
Censorship.
Oh, good point. Good evening. Oh, good evening.
Hello again.
Yes, who's this?
It's Adam.
Oh, you again? Come on. Well, okay, go ahead, hurry up.
I broke the cable.
Yeah.
First of all, it's not nearly as expensive to fix as this person claims. Fiber optic cable is very cheap, first of all. I mean, all it is, it's a little thing of plastic with black plastic casing around it. It's not very expensive to manufacture.
Yeah, it's a very tedious job to have to piece together every single line again, you know, after it gets cut. But
actually, the fact is that they don't have to, it's not splicing it as you take, like the way you splice copper cables. You don't have to take the two individual wires and splice them into each other. All they do is they take out the cut wire, they go to where, you know, there are repeaters. They plug one end, they take a new cable, they plug one end into the hole in the repeater, they plug the other end into the hole in the other repeater, and poof, it's fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is the way the big bundles of cables are being destroyed. There are big bundles of cables that are about as thick as your arm, for example. And you can't cut those, for example, with a regular hacksaw. It wouldn't work. You have to use special hydraulic cutters to cut them.
Right, okay, but you see, my point is not so much that. It's that all the phones that I tried to use the other day in the city were not vandalized. They were just broken as a matter of course, or removed by the phone company as a matter of course, because they do that sometimes,
and
not fixed, not replaced. And, you know,
here's
who
worst,
suffers from that?
The worst thing of all, which I think you'll agree is the worst, the phone company right now is planning to go and ask for a rate increase.
Yeah, now how is it they're able to do that? How is it, since they got all these people working overtime, do they have time to actually formulate a rate increase? You know, it should be wartime for them. It should be a matter of crisis. They should be working day and night to get the strike over with.
We can instead of...
Now, you see, look, when you have people on strike, right, you have the union on strike, they're standing out there with picket signs. Those picket signs are a reminder that they're on strike. They do that day, they do that night. Now, you know, I'm not saying the management is the wrong party here, but it just doesn't seem that they're doing this day and night as much. They should be saying, we've got to end this strike. You know, above all else, we have to end this strike. I mean, forget about the rate increase. Postpone that. This is a crisis. Get the strike over with first. You know, people are suffering. And God help those people that depend on their phones that can't get service, you know, that aren't loud enough to complain about it. They're just silently suffering there somewhere. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, enough is enough. I can take a good adventure along with anybody else, but, you know, it's been dragging on now for too long, and the company is not trying hard enough. I'm sorry, they're just not. I mean, what can the strikers do? They're on strike. They go to the bargaining sessions. I don't think the strikers are saying, we're not talking. It's usually the management that says, we're not talking. And they should both be forced to talk. I mean, there should be some kind of way of doing this.
Well, there should be, but what should be and what happens in real life usually aren't exactly the same.
Yeah, well, we're the ones, you know, fueling this thing with money. And, you know, if we don't pay our bill, our phone gets disconnected very promptly.
Actually,
so what do we do? What do we do?
You can run your phone bill up to $250 or something like that before they disconnect it.
Uh-huh.
And then, in other words, for most people, that would be several months.
Right, but nobody wants to get their phone disconnected, you know?
Still, $250. The average phone bill is, what, maybe $30 a month, perhaps?
I don't have no idea.
Well, I believe that's what the average phone bill is, something around that. I know that's what... I know some people's phone bills who are that much who don't... And they're pretty average people.
Uh-huh.
And $30 a month, and It'll take a while to get up to 250 there. You know, it would take for almost a year. So you could feasibly, if you have maybe $30 a month as your phone bill, go for almost a year without having to pay it all.
Yeah, but you see, the people should not have to organize this. They should just get the service they pay for. That's all I'm saying. You know, I'm not trying to get boycotts and, you know, people overpaying by a penny or underpaying by a penny to mess up the computers. You know, we have better things to do than that. Let's just get the service back and put the pressure on the company to, you know, to do this.
Sure, you staple your phone bill.
Okay. If you can do that much, I guess that'll be a help somewhat. But